You're listening to the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect, and I am your host, Mummy Imperfect, aka Reena Dipti Annabelle. Hope you guys are all doing well in this half term week. I wasn't ready for half term. Like, I was literally shocked that half term came around so quickly. And when I did, I hastily made some plans for socially distanced day trips, like the trampoline park, Kew Gardens. I thought I was going to go there, nature reserves, and none of it happened. My sister-in-law came to stay with her baby. Now, don't worry, before anyone freaks out, I will let you know we are her support bubble. And it has been the most lovely time, just chilling, lots of cuddles with the baby, good food, you know. The kids were so happy playing with the baby, they behaved themselves for once. Family and simple things, that is what this half term has ended up being about, which is lovely. And it's so lovely that me and my husband are begging my sister-in-law to stay till the end of the week just so the kids will keep being good. So far, I have bribed her with cakes and nice dinners, and it seems to be working. Because, you know, half term can get a bit crazy with kids being at home, especially like it's so wet and rainy, they can't even go in the garden or anywhere. Like, we have been doing walks and stuff, but it's not a lot going on. And then my guest for this week unfortunately had to cancel. It happens, and this has happened to me before, and when it's happened before, it's been even more last minute than this. And so I've gone ahead and put something out, flying solo, to just do something short and sweet for you guys. So last night I thought, what can I do? What should I talk to you about? What intimate, one-sided conversation can I have with you? Or should I have a week off? Because, you know, I have not had a week off. And then I realised I have been doing this podcast, the second series of The Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect, every single week since the beginning of February. And this week is the 40th episode. Now, that's a bit special, isn't it? I think so. So I didn't want to take a break. And instead, I thought, why not throw it back and look at all the best bits from the season, from this season of The Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect? Because over the past 39 episodes, I have talked about a range of topics, including pregnancy, birth, identity, mental health, sexuality, and body hair. And I've had some fabulous guests on as well, including Miss England, Dr. Basha Mukherjee, Great British Bake Off's Chetna Makkan, comedian and writer Athena Kublenu, and many, many more. So, here you go. These are the best bits from the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect. You are very welcome.
I was just constantly sick, and it was probably at least 8 to 9 times a day. Had a few times that I had to go into hospital to be on a drip, because obviously you become quite dehydrated. So my pregnancy was very different to what I saw in terms of what I thought it was going to be like as well. And, you know, I'm very fortunate people around me, people that have been pregnant, my friends have all had really good pregnancies. But I noticed it was only after I started being how vocal about how much I hated being pregnant and how much I just did not, I didn't want to be pregnant anymore because it was just making me so sick. Then a few of my friends were like, you know what? We went through this and it was really bad, but you're kind of, you're in a bit of a bubble because you don't ever want to say anything bad about being pregnant as well. So yeah, it was quite unexpected. And I think it's only once you go for it that is you start looking into it. And I remember I read your blog. Do you remember when you were early on and I messaged you, didn't I? Because I was like, oh my God, you're pregnant and you're having like these as well. Like, when will it stop? And I remember you were seeing tips of like, you know, drinking lemonade. And then you have like the old wives' tales of eating ginger, which never worked for me. Yeah. Anyone that said to me, have ginger, I wanted to get ginger and throw it back at them. I was like, that ain't working, mate. So yeah, it was a really odd time. And I think pregnancy is amazing if you have a really good pregnancy. But I think there's a bit of a dark side of pregnancy as well. And I think having sickness that bad is one of them. And also healthcare professionals, there wasn't really that much, research into it. So when I Googled, as you do, because you're thinking, oh my God, why is this happening? Yeah. The only person that kept coming up is Kate Middleton. She's got hyperemesis. And I was like, okay, great. It's all about, you know, the princess has it.
That's why people started knowing what it was, because they didn't give a shit.
Yeah, but I think in one sense it was good in terms of people were actually thinking, okay, this isn't just morning sickness. This isn't just a really bad kind of spate of being sick. But then you go online, and I joined a couple of groups as well on Facebook, which helped, because I just think sometimes you do think like you're going a bit mad. And I think especially in our culture, being like pregnancy is such a good thing, and it is, but you're kind of a bit, I think you're a bit seen as a bit ungrateful if you don't kind of like being pregnant. And it was only when I spoke to my mum, because my mum saw me at my lowest, and I think she was my rock. Like, my husband was great, but I think with men, when they don't understand it and they can't feel what you're feeling, it's a bit different. Whereas my mum, it was only I found out while I was being so sick, is that she had the same sickness with four of us, but she didn't tell anyone. And I was like, Mum, why didn't you tell me this before? Mm. And she was like, just, it was the dumb thing back in the day. She was like, I was scared to go into hospital when she was pregnant because they would keep her in. And, you know, just back in the day, you didn't think like that. You never thought going into hospital was actually something that could help you. So it was really interesting. That whole journey has totally changed my outlook on pregnancy as well.
And actually, I am quite sensitive to sort of older members of the family where they do sort of single out my son, Veed, and they'll say,
give him more attention.
Yeah, they'll give him more attention. And, you know, and I think this, yeah, they, because he's a boy, no other reason, but because he's a boy. And I can see that my Mahi, who's 9, Neha's too young, but Mahi picks up on it. She does. And then I feel like I'm kind of like, I kind of run to her and go, you know, I want to just say to her, oh, no, this is not why this has happened, you know. And I'm trying to sort of cover it up, because I don't want to blatantly say to her, well, this is only happening because you're a girl. You know, you can't say that to your child, can you? Because you don't want them to actually... What I'm doing is smoothing over, and I don't really want her to pick up this complex, which is, I would explain it to her when she's older, that, you know, that this is a really old sort of tradition, and it's hopefully dying out, that, you know, this is what I experienced, and you might have felt this a little bit, and... Yeah, but I just want to smooth it over and just go, no, but that's not happening. But I think in the back of my mind, I know it is.
Yeah, I see. For me, obviously, we were 3 girls, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we could have been that family which was, like, totally, like, gender neutral, like, let's empower the females and stuff. And we were to some extent. But I could feel that thing of the disappointment from other family members. And it's like, my dad, right? And so he's one of 3 brothers. And then everybody had girls, apart from my youngest cha-cha, who finally then had a boy. And the fact that everyone was like, oh, pray for a boy, it has to be a boy. And it's like, do you know what?
You know, you just sit there thinking, what?
That's what I grew up... No, but I was so aware of it, because even though, like, even my younger sister is 13 years younger than me.
Mm.
And I know full well that was a last-ditch attempt at having a boy. Mm. It was blatantly. And then when... my mom was pregnant, they didn't find out the gender and stuff. I think you could at that point, but they didn't. And the hope was, oh, let it be a boy. And then it wasn't, it was a girl. And there was that disappointment. I'm telling you, like, I could feel it from everybody. Oh, never mind, and all this. And I felt it myself. I really felt it, you know. I grew up with that. And then my mom telling the stories about when she was little, about when, you know, they didn't have much money and stuff, but they just come to the country, and then... when they used to have like meat to eat, they used to have like all the bony bits, the girls, and then the actual meaty bits used to go to the boys.
Oh my god, I've heard the saying, "Mundianu meat, the kuriyanu tari."
Yeah, that's literally they had the tari, yeah.
And the bones, and then my god, the boys, that's crazy.
Yeah, and then they were taught to do all the housework and cooking, and the boys literally were taught to do nothing.
Oh yeah, I mean that's crazy.
I mean, I do love my nanny, you know, and. But I think she did make the same mistakes as a lot of people in that generation made of, like, you know, let's get married off quickly and that kind of thing. So I, you know, she told me all of this stuff and I was aware of it.
We're kind of seeing the boys are assets and the girls are liabilities.
Yeah.
That's how it feels like, your character and, you know, your reputation growing up and, you know... I do remember my dad having a conversation about me, about making sure... that, you know, to take care of my reputation and all that. But I don't think he had the same conversations with my brothers. I don't think he did.
Because there's always that
thing. It's all coming back to me now.
See? Oh my God, you're right. You're
I'm all right.
But because there's that thing of like the worst disgrace, one of the worst disgraces that a girl can do is get pregnant. Boys can't get pregnant. They can impregnate other people, right?
Yeah.
Which is still bad, but it's not as bad as you getting pregnant, mm-hmm. a girl getting yeah. pregnant. That is everybody's every parent's worst nightmare, really. Mm-hmm. Indian parents, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That girl.
My name is Issy. I'm younger than my scum. Then I'm going to miss preschool.
Well, what else are you going to do when coronavirus goes?
I'm going to go to singing lesson and I'm going to do the shops, but it doesn't matter. Now I can't go to anywhere because of the coronavirus. See you next week because coronavirus is not gone yet.
I feel like coronavirus isn't a bad or good thing because I'm missing my friends, but it makes up to it because me and my mama are having a really good time at home because we are making food and doing blends every day.
If you're next to someone, then you could have just caught something or anything, and that could be really dangerous and harmful. But like, and so you like think, oh, what? Going
when
to
the schools do open, kids are going to have to go into a very different school setting. And preparing kids for that transition is one of the things that I spoke to Shahana Knight about. Shahana is the founder and director of TPC Therapy Limited, a mental health service for children and young people. She's an expert in her field. She's been featured on BBC Newsround, BBC Teach and BBC Bite Size. Plus, she's a finalist in the upcoming Ladies First Awards 2020 in the Inspirational Women and Business Entrepreneur categories. And I was lucky enough to be able to have a chat with her yesterday. So have a listen.
You know, we're into week 7 now of the lockdown. And, you know, people always say, you know, kids are resilient and stuff. I mean, you being an expert on children's mental health, how much does it actually affect them, though? What's going on?
I think it affects all children in different ways. And it does depend on how you are speaking to the children and what they're exposed to as well. And I suppose also the age of your child. So, you know, those children who are much younger, are they around when the news is on? Are they around when the radio's on? You know, what is it that they're picking up? I think if we think about it like that, and we're maybe not exposing the children to it as much, then they're going to only know what we tell them. And I think that's the best way for it to be for the little ones. For the older ones, they've got their own phones, they've got their own iPads, you know, they're seeing this news for themselves. I think in that case, it's about how we talk to them about it that's really key. I think it's going to affect us all. It's affecting us as adults. It's going to affect the children. Even just being in lockdown for 7 weeks is unusual and difficult. So I think, you know, being stuck with your parents for 7 weeks, whatever age you are, is quite intense. So all of that will have an impact. Not going to school, not seeing their friends, routines have changed. So we do need to take that into consideration when we're thinking about their well-being and mental health.
And what about like dinners? Like, have you got any good ideas for people of like really quite simple dinners where you can just use store cupboard things?
I think, you know, dinners, actually, you can make so many nice, healthy, delicious things which don't take hours and hours for dinners. You know, things like I've shared loads and loads of recipes actually on my Instagram, on my YouTube channel. Since the lockdown began, most of my recipes are easy anyways, but these were like even easier if possible. Like things like, you know, throw some potatoes and spinach for a curry together, make some chickpeas and spinach, you know, nice quick curry. You can just have some red lentils which take 10 minutes exactly to, you know, cook and soften, and then you can have a nice tempering on top. So there are actually lots and lots of, you can have, you know, some cooked rice, which is easily available everywhere. And then you can make fried rice, you can make chicken fried rice, you can make veg fried rice, you can make egg fried rice. Dry noodles are very easily available. So you can add lots of veg chopped up and make, you know, noodles, stir fried noodles. So there are lots of healthy, quick things you can do for meals, actually. So I don't think there is much, you know, excuse, I guess, for, you know, not being able to. And these are ingredients which are completely and fully available in all supermarkets and local shops. So it's not something you can't buy. And none of these use flour or, you know, things like that. So all these things are available and you can buy them. If you just plan it that today I'm going to make noodles, tomorrow I'm going to make rice, then I'm going to make a curry, we'll have it with some rice. If you just plan it and then when you are out shopping, you buy exactly what you need.
That colonial footprint of not liking black people, Asian people don't like black people, Asian people have a problem with browner brown people, you know, and just changing that, like, I'm literally, I don't know, it really gets on my nerves because I don't know how and when that is going to change. And I don't know about you, but I've seen people sharing the hashtag Black Lives Matter, and I'm like, do you even think brown or browner lives matter? Like, what are you even talking about? Because I know full well that if your kid said, oh yeah, I'm going to marry this person and they're black, you wouldn't even think your kid's life matter anymore. Because it, I'm telling you, they'd be so outraged. It just basically really annoys me. I don't know, how have you kind of seen people behaving like that?
Oh, my whole life. I mean, I'm in your situation. My parents, I have an African dad and an Indian mum, and, you know, I mean, I won't talk too much about their lives, but, you know, my mum was excommunicated from her family.
Was she?
No other way to say it. Yeah, absolutely. And they, you know, gotten over it, I guess, you know, 30 or 40 years later. You know, I just had this joke. I talk about this in my stand. I had this joke where I was like, if you only watched Indian movies and then you go to India and you think there's movies set in Denmark, you know, like, just because the cast is just like so white, you would never know how brown Indians are if you just only saw Indians in the movie. So there's a real cultural issue of colorism in India, and I think let's just call it the caste system. That's what it is, and I think that's the crazy thing about the caste system is it predates colonialism. How do you eradicate that? We can't even eradicate European colonialism, right? I think the first thing, you have to admit you've got the problem. You are such a rare person. There aren't many Asian people that will talk about this. You know, even when you speak on your experiences, I make a podcast that my friend, and it's only since people have really been listening to me talk to friends and really articulate what I've been through and what life is like, they're like, oh my God, it is true. Like, there is this issue. I think, we just have to admit we have a problem. Like, in South Asian communities in particular, there's a massive colorism problem. And that is why marrying African people is a disaster, because your kids are going to be brown. That's the biggest thing. The other thing we have to get over is patriarchy. It is always the most patriarchal cultures that take people to marry and have children. It's not a coincidence. And that is because in patriarchal cultures, you marry out. In cultures that are cool, you marry into them. That's why black people have so many mixed relationships. Because you don't marry out of blackness. You can't. Not possible. We don't give a shit. We literally are like, you can't marry. And obviously, we're still impacted by the one drop rule. So we're like, we're lucky to be black anyway, right? Which is problematic in other ways.
In terms of the culture and stuff, and like, you mentioned Indian matchmaking. It's good to know that women are now kind of standing on their own feet, creating their own businesses, and you know, being money savvy. But then, is there still this thing of the male ego? Like, then when you do find somebody, you know, and say you earn more than them, you're a successful woman in your own right, is that still scary for some guys?
Okay, so it's interesting because in my book, for example, I give the example of Tammy's mother telling her, are you sure you want to buy that car? Because if you buy it, you're going to intimidate guys and they're not going to want to, you know, step up to you because they'll feel like you're like above them. And I think to a certain extent, there's that fear. Like, there's men who would rather a woman that they get to look after. But I think that is changing in that men are starting to see that to a certain extent, like, a woman who is financially independent, or men should start to see that a woman who is financially independent is not a threat. She's a value addition, because it means that, you know, 1 + 1 = 3, because now there's synergy, because you're partnering with someone who brings something to the table. But I do think that for a huge chunk of African men, there's still an ego thing. They don't want, they might complain about, you know, having to look after women and, oh, women are too dependent or whatever. But when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of it, I don't know if the African man is necessarily ready for that fully, like, financially independent woman. But then I think that there are more guys who are, you know, open-minded, who are looking for partners. So it's a mixed bag, I think.
Like you said, the kind of background that Cardi B comes from, she was a stripper, and she's open about the fact that she used to strip. And, yeah, you know, she did it for money. And the thing is that, like you said, she wants to make money. And she said, I like making money and stuff. She's playing the game. So if in that world of stripping and you're trying to get men to think a certain way about you to get money out of them, right?
Yeah.
And sexuality, the way that she sees it, is kind of walking a certain way, dancing a certain way, on a pole or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's because that's where she comes from. I don't think that all men like that, but I think that for her, that is what she, the world that she's been in. So I think it's a representation of the way that she sees sexuality.
Yeah, I agree. And and we adapt what we've survived, and it becomes our strengths. And I do understand the outrage to a level, but she is exactly who she says she is.
Yeah.
She understands the power of, like, how the video, it's got a lot of up-and-comers or prolific people. So you've got Meg Thee Stallion, who's just come out of the gates, literally, like, in a race, and she is winning. So, yeah, like, sorry about the pun, but she is literally doing it. And then you've got Kylie Jenner, billionaire, empire, you know, sister, became famous, how she became famous, brought the family in. And I think that they understand that together, they may be objectified individually and people might have an opinion about them, but if they're controlling how they wield that image to get what they want from it, it works for them. Now, that's not something that I would personally do myself, I don't think. I'm from a South Asian background. My mom was born in India. My dad was born in England, but I grew up shy about sexuality. I think a lot of South Asian girls did.
So
it's been an adjustment to see that coming across from time to time. Sometimes it does shock me, but now I've started to evolve as, I think we can be so quick to judge and we can be so quick to, you know, want to have an opinion and want to say this and be outraged about that.
That if you treat me differently to my brothers, you're not changing anything.
No, but this is where the problem is. Like, I have literally, this makes me so angry that being a mom of three girls, some people will say to me, oh my gosh, you know, you've got three girls, I feel sorry for you. It's a really horrible world out there for girls, isn't it? And I'm like, you're the mom of boys. Why don't you raise your sons to have some respect for women? And that's a few less idiots for my kids to worry about. It's like, exactly. Well, what are you, do you know, we are the people that can raise our kids to have some respect and some sense in their heads. If you keep thinking, oh, it's a really crap world for girls, isn't it? Boys can do what they want. Even in the Western society, boys will be boys. How many times have you heard boys will be boys? Yeah.
And that's got to be the change.
Boys, it will be boys, lets boys off the hook for a lot of stuff. Oh, you know, just messing around with all these girls. Boys will be boys. No.
But then I've had it in, boys will be boys, but I've had it so many times where, like, I've been in meetings and I've been a female. And because I wouldn't say I'm the biggest person in the room. I'm not tall or anything like that. But I've had meetings where I'm in, you know, quite high up, lots of people in a meeting, and an Asian male in the room who's slightly older than me has left the room, shaken everybody's hand, apologised for having to leave late, and come to me and then patted me on the head.
What?
Yes.
That is so rude.
And he left the room and everybody just looked at me as in, like, did that just happen? we've got to change that. I had to go back to him and say, can you please never, ever do that to me again? You might be Asian. I don't know what, you might be older than me.
Mm.
You might, until I had to, you know, I had to confront that person to stop that behavior. And we've got to stop it. It's not cute. It's not okay. It's not, it's just not okay.
Don't think that we're just on, you know, the bottom shelf just because we've hit our 40s.
Mm.
Pay attention to us. We have desires, likes and interests too. And then it's also talking about the style and the psychology of, you know, dressing up and being fashionable and how that has an impact on the, an effect on your mental health. And, you know, lipstick and makeup, some in some of the most difficult days, has really helped to boost my mood or get me to feel really confident around an experience that I've had, which has left me feeling anxious, fearful, like Shiva's death. You know, so putting on a full face of makeup and then going out to his funeral was not about me looking glamorous and going to his funeral. It was about me wearing my cover to help me face what I was about to do.
Yeah, I thought it was funny because my friend messaged me about that. We sent voice notes the entire time watching it. It was quite funny. But she said, oh, isn't that mother-in-law a bit much? And I reminded her of one Christmas I was together with my friends. And a mum called me and we talked for 1 hour and she said, basically, I've got my basement ready. You can move in. I want a live-in wife. And this is before I have even spoken to the boy. So, but I was quite, I don't know, professional, kind about the whole thing. And by the end of the hour, she sized me up and she said, OK, so can we take the next steps? I said, OK, fabulous. Is your son ready to speak to me? And then she said, oh, no, he's not ready to speak to girls yet. And I went, well, this is going to be a very difficult marriage between me and you if your son's not involved at all.
That's how you can tell you're comfortable with somebody. When if a person can see you at your worst, that's when you know that that is a person. Like my other half, when I had my C-section, if anybody's had a C-section, you can't even move. You can't move at all. Like I couldn't move out the bed even. I had the little end. He stayed there with, like, thank God for our hospital. He stayed the whole time at the hospital. So I was there for 2 days, like, doing labour, like, in labour. Then I ended up having a C-section. Yeah. He was there the whole time, sleeping on the chair, you know, me in pain or whatever. And he was, like, getting up and whatever. Then when I had my C-section, the next day, the lady's like, get out of bed. My other half, and we'd been together, what, 3 years in that time, he had to wash me, wash my hair, shower me, help me put my underwear on, help me put my clothes on. Even to the bit that he even had to help me put my sanitary towel in my pad because I couldn't even bend down to do that. So he's seen me in the most worst possible state ever, where a woman, you can't even bend down to, you know, pull her knickers up.
When you're most vulnerable, though. It's, do you know what I mean? It's like your blood's coming out from everywhere, yeah.
He's seen me in that stage, and like even when I'm at home and I'm ill, and he seems, and even then, with no care in the world, he's still like, are you okay? Do you want this? Shall I get you this? Or, you know, and from the fact that I can say to him, like, he'll go shopping, and I'm like, can you get me my side? He knows what brand that I like. He gets everything. He knows my toiletries. I don't even have to tell him. So that is a person of what, you know, he knows, once you, a person who knows you in that way, you know how special that person is. So looks doesn't come into it.
Yeah.
That person cares about you and love. And that is what I say to, like, that is a soulmate and that is love. Because if a person loves you like that and they care about you, that is love. And that is a soulmate. And
I really hope that you have enjoyed this special celebratory episode of the podcast. Like, I started this podcast as a passion project to bring women together and to be a place that we could support each other and just celebrate each other and have real conversations. And in particular, I wanted this podcast to be a place that women of colour in particular can tell their stories, because we have some very unique stories to tell. And sometimes there aren't that many platforms for us to tell those stories. And, you know, I'm happy with the way that things have developed. Like series one of the podcast, yes, there were some gems in that. It was very much like a rough and, you know, still figuring out what the hell I was doing. But again, listen back to that also, because there were some gems in that and really lovely, lovely conversations with guests. So I just want you to know that you can listen back to any of the episodes in full in the back catalogue on Podbean, iTunes, Amazon Music and Spotify. Remember to like and subscribe and share this podcast too. And it would be really, really lovely if you left me a comment on iTunes or Podbean or wherever you are listening, because I think my podcast then gets pushed up and I would be very, very happy. And I just want to say a very big thank you to all the amazing, lovely guests who are featured in my podcast. Thanks for being real and honest and open, because, you know, hearing those real conversations, particularly about important and sensitive issues, can make the rest of us feel better about stuff that we are going through too. And it's also a chance to learn, I think. And lastly, I want to say thank you, lovely listeners, for choosing to stick me in your ears. Thank you for your lovely feedback, for your support, your encouragement. And I'm going to keep making content for you every week. And I will be back next week with a brand new episode. Until then, take care, stay safe, stay well, stay strong, my loves. Bye.